Welcome to another episode of Pods for Docs. It's January 2023, our first episode of the year. My name is Dr. Zinyu Tai, Neurology Registrar in Oxford, United Kingdom. Now, in a previous episode, we covered the important and common topic of basal cell carcinoma. Today, we have a natural follow-on episode where we tackle squamous cell carcinoma, which, as you'll hear, is not as common as a BCC, but equally as important for other reasons. Plus, it's often a favorite for the lab exam. Back with us today, we've got Dr. Lees, consultant dermatologist in the United Kingdom, who will take us through squamous cell carcinoma. So welcome, Dr. Lees.
Hello, Zin.
Great to have you back and very excited to discuss this topic. Why don't you kick us off and tell us why is it important that we know about squamous cell carcinoma?
Squamous cell carcinoma is a malignant tumor that is arising from the keratinocytes in the epidermis. That is the upper area of the epidermis, opposed to the basal layer that we discussed in our previous episode. It is the second most common type of skin cancer, opposed to basal cell carcinoma being the most common. And although most cases of squamous cell carcinoma are very treatable, it can occasionally metastasize, and we need a proper diagnosis and referral to secondary care as soon as possible.
It does sound like it's important for us to know about. So why don't we talk a little bit about the risk factors for developing squamous cell carcinoma then?
It's very important to note that there are different risk factors in squamous cell carcinoma than for basal cell carcinoma. I will kick off with what I think is the most significant difference, and that is that patients with chronic inflammation and immunosuppression are more prone to develop squamous cell carcinomas opposed to the basal cell carcinomas that we discussed, where we know that sun exposure is the major risk factor. It is important to remember that patients on immunosuppressive therapy, especially patients that had organ transplant, and also in the modern medicine world that we live in, patients that receive immunosuppressive therapy for multiple inflammatory diseases have a higher risk to develop squamous cell carcinomas. I would suggest that if a patient is mentioned to be on immunosuppressive therapy of any nature, I will think of a squamous cell carcinoma.
Yeah, I think that's really important that all our listeners should go away with a highlight that immunosuppression plus skin lesion, think of squamous cell carcinoma, even though squamous cell carcinoma is more common, closer to the equator, that sun exposure link should really belong to the basal cell carcinomas. Whereas squamous cell carcinoma, you have to be very careful about immunosuppression. And I will just echo your message that these biologic agents are also an important immunosuppression risk factor, as well as previous cancer, because that's something we're seeing more and more in the exams, because we're using these biologic agents more. So we're expected to know that that can lead to immunosuppression.
I couldn't agree more. Another important difference to note is that basal cell carcinoma would be more prevalent on the head and neck, but that squamous cell carcinoma is most prevalent on the hand, and that is where a patient was exposed to sun. Another important difference with squamous cell carcinoma to keep in mind is that it more readily develops in areas of previous burn wounds. It can also arise in areas of chronic ulcerative diseases. And to keep in mind, especially, is ulcers on the lower legs in the elderly population. Also around the mouth area, squamous cell carcinoma is more prevalent on the lower lip area, and this can be associated with chronic smoking, especially in males over the age of 60.
That's really interesting. It's more common in the hands, but also along ulcers, especially leg ulcers, and also around the mouth in smokers. And I guess this harkens back to the chronic inflammation that you mentioned earlier.
That's absolutely true. Another risk factor would be previous burn wounds and the scarring of burn wounds, where patients can develop ulcerative lesions, and this need to arise high suspicion for squamous cell carcinoma. And I do think that for the examination, should the mention of previous burn wound with scarring and a new formed skin lesion, think of squamous cell carcinoma first.
Great. I'm definitely going to remember that. And does squamous cell carcinoma have a link to any infections?
There is a very big association with infections. We do see a link to HPV, especially the high-risk genital HPV strands, and patients, especially with immunosuppression, either with HIV infection or due to immunosuppressive therapy, who contract HPV infection can develop squamous cell carcinomas more readily This can occur anywhere on the body, but it's very important to always check the tips of the fingers, as a wart can easily be confused with an early onset squamous cell carcinoma. And in the immunosuppressed population, this can be more aggressive and need to be addressed instantly.
Got you. And now you've already alluded to this, but could you just give us like a one-liner about the underlying pathophysiology of squamous cell carcinoma?
Absolutely. As we know, UVB or radiation is a known mutagen capable of inducing DNA damage. And this can lead to keratinocyte transformation, which then derive into malignant cells. UV radiation has also been shown to alter the immune response. And this is why immunosuppressed patients are more prone to develop squamous cell carcinoma.
Perfect. I understand that much better now. Thanks for that, Liz. So let's move on to the clinical presentation. And again, while we've touched on this, I want you to give us the headlines. You know, how does squamous cell carcinoma present?
Cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma usually present as a scaly or crusty lump that is slowly enlarging, and it can arise within a pre-existing actinic keratosis. For the listeners, mean that there is a sun damaged area with keratotic scaling. They grow over weeks to months, and sometimes at the time of presentation, they can already start to ulcerate. They are very often tender or painful, and patients usually tell you that they experience episodes of bleeding or oozing. Important for clinical examination is to assess the skin areas that are sun exposed, particularly, as we said, the hands, forearms, and lower legs, and also the face, lips, and ears, where squamous cell carcinoma can readily develop. It's interesting to know that the size can vary from a few millimeters to several centimeters in diameter. And if there's a suspicion of squamous cell carcinoma, it should rather have a biopsy to confirm.
Great. So I was just going to come on to that. So you've read my mind, but just a brief recap, cutaneous squamous cell carcinomas are these scaly, crusty lumps, and they often ulcerate and bleed and even ooze. So that's quite different from basal cell carcinomas. Now, why don't you then tell us about the investigations? How would you pursue a suspected squamous cell carcinoma?
Then, as we know, as clinicians, a good history and thorough clinical examination will always be key to make a diagnosis. If you suspect a squamous cell carcinoma, a biopsy will be needed. A referral to secondary care on the 2-week wait pathway is essential.
Okay, that's really useful. So if you are worried about squamous cell carcinoma, if it's in your exam question, the appropriate investigation is definitely a biopsy. So let's move on to the management there. So you've suspecting a squamous cell carcinoma, you've done an urgent referral to secondary care under the 2-week wait, which is what we use in the United Kingdom for suspected cancers. What do you do as a dermatologist once you get this patient?
Treatment is usually direct excision, and this is then sent to the laboratory for histological evaluation. Squamous cell carcinomas can be rated in different types, which can be poorly differentiated, well differentiated, and there are different levels and grades. Treatment is usually surgery with the appropriate margins based on the size of the lesion and also the differentiation that is seen by the pathology department. And sometimes adjuvant treatment, for example, radiotherapy, will be needed if it's in a high-risk area or for a high-risk patient. But this is usually discussed on a secondary care level between several departments, including oncology, dermatology, and plastic surgery. In the United Kingdom, there are usually MDTs, which is the platform that we use to discuss these complicated cases and make further treatment recommendations.
Could you just give us an example? What is a high-risk area?
Sometimes on the face area or neck and ears, it's very difficult to achieve the proper margins via surgery only. If there are close margins on the specimens, then radiation therapy is usually indicated to make sure that the lesion will not repeat. This is also of value on the scalp area, where we do see multiple squamous cell carcinomas in our elderly population.
Got you. That makes total sense. It's high risk because you may not be able to achieve the best surgical margins. And so you think about some adjuvant radiotherapy. Here's a question I did wonder, though. If you saw a patient which you thought their lesion really looked like a squamous cell carcinoma, would you still proceed with the biopsy or would you go straight for an excision?
Sometimes the lesion will need plastic surgery for proper excision. And then a punch biopsy is very valuable just to confirm the depth of the lesion. This enables our plastic surgery colleagues to do better surgical planning, and that will be the reason why we sometimes do a punch biopsy first.
Got you. Amazing. So really, if you get this in the exam, the punch biopsy is really the best option when you're suspecting squamous cell carcinoma. Perfect. Anything else you'd like to tell us about the management of squamous cell carcinoma?
I do think important for our listeners is on a primary care level to provide the patient with an information leaflet when they are suspected to have this or maybe have the diagnosis already. It's also very important to advise patients to do regular self-examination of the entire skin as they can be prone to develop more of these lesions. Sun protection is very, very important. And as our listeners will know, discussions about the use of sunscreen and also physical barriers cannot be overemphasized.
Great. That's really useful. I have to say, after our chats together, I'm definitely much more cognizant about my sun protection and use more sunscreen as a result.
That's okay. Fantastic, Sven.
All right. Amazing. I think we've covered quite a lot about squamous cell carcinoma. Very useful, both from a clinical and also an exam point of view. So I just want to recap in the context of our previous episode on basal cell carcinomas. Basal cell carcinomas, as we discussed, are common. In fact, the most common type of cancer in humans as we grow older, often slow growing, and you have a bit of time when it comes to treatment options if you pick this up. By contrast, squamous cell carcinoma is less common, just a little bit less common, but a much more urgent referral to the secondary care, so the dermatology service, as it's often malignant with a high risk of spread or metastases. So you want to do a biopsy if you suspect, but nonetheless, it's very treatable if caught early. How does that sound?
That's absolutely true, Zen. And just to remember that actinic keratosis can be the precursors for squamous cell carcinomas. And I couldn't overemphasize the need to treat this on a primary care level, because this can actually prevent the formation of squamous cell carcinomas later on.
Amazing. I think I've seen some questions that come up about actinokeratoses. So that's really useful reminder. Amazing. So thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully our listeners found it useful. I know I certainly did. And for those of you who haven't caught the basal cell carcinoma episode, I highly recommend you do that. And we're all looking forward to the next episode. In the meantime, do check out our resources on the Plavable website, and take care and stay safe.